Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Bringing together some 115 photographs from across four decades of the artist's career, Sally Mann, A Thousand Crossings, offers both a sweeping overview of her achievement and a focused exploration of the continuing influence of the American South on her work. In the late 1990s, borrowing freely and shamelessly from the past, Mann began to use the same wet collodion process that countless 19th century photographers had employed to make their negatives. To learn the ins and outs of this somewhat cumbersome process that dominated photographic process from the mid-1850s into the 1880s, Mann could not have found better instructors than Mark Osterman, photographic historian at George Eastman Museum, and his wife, photographer France Scully Osterman. On April 21, 2018, in conjunction with the exhibition, Scully Osterman shares her experience as Mann's guide to making the technical and aesthetic leap to wet plate collodion. Although she came to appreciate the almost ceremonial aspect of creating a collodion wet plate, Mann realized as she experimented that it was the flaws I like. This program is made possible by the James D. and Catherine K. Steele Fund for Photography.
Thanks so much for coming. I wasn't sure if the nice weather was going to bring people or be distraction. So thank you. So I'm going to talk today about the collodion process and also our relationship and correspondence with Sally. Mark and I started teaching the collodion process in the mid-1990s and actually got into the process. Mark started experimenting in the late 80s. And then when we got together in 1990, he started teaching me. So I was his first student in collodion. We embraced the process, I think, because we were both have backgrounds as artists in painting and drawing, and could see this process of photography is sort of a cross between painting and photography. There's something very painterly about the process, the handcrafting, making your own film. It's very exciting. I'll just begin with this because this is so typical of things that Sally sends us. For those who can't read it, it says, "With thanks from your worst student," right there. which we find amusing, actually, because certainly not our worst student, and also she's our most notable student. So I thought I'd start with just talking about the process, how it's done, for those of you who are not familiar with it. And I won't spend too much time on this, but we're going to have questions afterwards if I skip over anything too quickly. So this is our studio in Rochester. And one of our cameras, this is probably a favorite camera of ours for our own work, an 8x10 sliding back. So this process you can make either positives or negatives. So positives on glass or amber types, positives on metal, which are tin types, or you can make negatives on glass. And then there's many other substances you can use. You could use plastic and make plastico types. You know, you can make up something new, mica types. So we start with we're gonna talk about negatives because that's what Sally is using for her process. So the first thing we do is cut the glass, and this is a 19th century glass cutter, a diamond cutter. I like to use a modern one myself, but I'm demonstrating here. And then the glass has to be scrupulously cleaned. This is to remove any kind of greasiness or dirt on the surface, but also to microabrade the surface of the glass. And then of course, it's dusted. And then we're going to pour the solution of collodion onto the plate. And collodion is a viscous liquid, which is cellulose nitrate, flammable, ether, flammable, alcohol, flammable, and then we add iodides and bromides to make it a photographic collodion. I just want you to notice, if you've seen Sally's, have you seen the exhibit? Everybody seen the exhibit? Okay. And then have you seen the video that she did? Okay. So in the video, if you haven't seen it yet, go see it, because it's absolutely priceless. Just notice the color of her collodion. This is color, collodion usually is like somewhere between yellow and maybe an amber color. Hers is red. And that's a very old collodion. So I was kind of shocked to see that and amused. But it's a very dangerous to use an old collodion because when you go to varnish it, you could actually make the image disappear. So as Todd and Vivian can tell you. So we pour the plate with collodion. This seems like an unnatural thing to do, is to pour a liquid onto a flat surface and then to try and coat the plate evenly. But it actually isn't the hardest part of the process. It just takes a few plates, I think, to sort of get the hang of it. Then once the plate is coated, and while it's still damp before it dries, we put it into a solution of silver nitrate. It's a silver nitrate dissolved in distilled water. So this is in the darkroom now. This is when we're actually making the film. The silver nitrate is reacting with the halides, the iodides and bromides on the plate, and we're making film. So you can start to see the reaction with the silver bath. And there the plate is finished. In this case, it's a nice creamy coating. We take it out of the silver bath, dry it off the back, and then put it into a plate holder. We bring it out to our subject. Now, I just want to point out, this is just for show. I don't normally photograph people in period attire, but this was just sort of for fun to show the process. So I'm putting the plate holder in. I've already focused on him. And I just want to show you this camera. It's unusual because it's got a sliding back. I pull the dark slide. And just so you can see what's happening inside the camera, because it has a sliding back, I can actually make two exposures on the same plate. So there's one exposure and the other. So I bring the plate holder back to the dark room, take the plate out. I'm pouring a developer on it. The developer is an iron developer. And how you pour the developer on makes a huge difference. If you pour it on, if I were to just take the plate and pour the developer straight down on the plate, where I poured it, there would be no image. It's opposite of what you might think, right? If I pour it along the edge evenly and have it go on like the tide coming in, I want to coat the plate evenly. That's the way we want it to come on. But you know, if you miss a spot, you'll have this sort of sweep mark. We call developer sweep. So there's many different effects that you would get here. So with collodion, there's 1,000 ways to screw up. But you have complete control over it, or no control. So I'm pouring the developer, and this is a visual experience. We're watching the plate develop. As artists, we love that, because we're visual people. So you can see I have two different exposures, right? The same plate. And then to stop the development, we wash the plate with water. Now we're going to fix the plate, and we fix it in either hypo, sodium thiosulfate, which is a modern fixer, and that's usually what we use for negatives, or we can use potassium cyanide usually for positives. And you can see it looks like an overexposed positive, right? And that's why with this process you can make a positive or a negative with the same process. It's really crazy when you think about it, because silver gelatin, if you look at a silver gelatin negative, the process that Sally was using before, orthofilm or black and white, even color actually, the silver particle is a dark color, and also the prints that you see in the gallery, the silver particle is the dark part of the picture. The white part of the picture is the paper underneath. With collodion, it's the opposite. Collodion is such a fine particle. The finer the particle, the lighter the color. So the lighter part of the picture here is the silver. And the clear part is the glass. You can see through. It's the opposite. So the finer the particle, the lighter the color. So if you have ASA 400 film that you use for black and white, this is ASA or ISO 1. Very, very fine resolution and very slow. So now we just wash the plate, and then we're going to dry the plate over flame. Actually, I just want to go back to this. Once you're done washing the plate, if you were unhappy with the plate, which sometimes we are, we wipe it off and start over again. You can just reuse the glass. So always editing. So if you're happy with it, you want to dry it. And then we're going to heat our varnish, which is a gum sandarac alcohol and oil of lavender. and it smells lovely. So we want the varnish to be warm and the plate to be warm. So this is a little trickier, actually, than pouring the clode in, because you really want to do a good job the first time. You pour off the excess. And then we dry it over a flame to harden the varnish. And eventually, you're left with just a coating of gum sandarac. The alcohol evaporates, and the oil of lavender eventually evaporates. And then we let it harden on a rack for a while. We would let it harden for at least a few days before we would print from it. Once you have a negative that's printed and varnished and it's dry, you can handle that plate. You don't have to worry about leaving fingerprints. I mean, once it's completely hard, that really protects it. And that's why amber types, which are positives on glass and varnished, that's why they're called amber types, because amber types, ambrotos, means imperishable, because it doesn't change. The varnish actually helps to protect the silver particles from tarnishing. It's an amazing process. It's really a superior process in a lot of ways to what we have, other analog methods that we have more recently. So in the background here, you can see that's a retouching stand. In the 19th century, they were frequently retouched their negatives. Faces were retouched because this process is insensitive to certain colors. So certain colors go darker, and to make the person look the way they look in person, they would want to retouch the face. Or sometimes they retouch skies and landscapes, that sort of thing. And just to give you an idea of the color sensitivity of the process, you can see this is a nice metaphor for sky. So you see the blue and white of the tablecloth and the blue of this vase. And now see how it looks in collodion. You can see the blue disappears here, and the blue and white, they blend together. So it's blue-sensitive film, blue and UV sensitive. So like blue eyes go white. Your blue jeans would be like white pants. And then also, look at the fruit here is a great example of how that turns dark. See how bright the colors are here. So when people think, they look at a 19th century image of a woman and she's in a, looks like a black dress, well, she could be wearing bright yellow or red. So it makes you think differently when you start to look at 19th century images. Oh, they didn't always wear black. Sometimes they were wearing bright colors that photographed black. We thought this was very interesting in the way that the roses sort of reverse in tonality. These have like a bluish pink, and these have a warmer color. So think about skin colors, Caucasian skin, especially how it turns darker. If you have warmth in your skin. So this is why they did retouching, is to try and make your skin look in the final image the way it looks in person. Now imagine taking this process out into the field, because you have to finish the plate after you pour it, put it into the silver bath, and then make your exposure. It has to be wet. It has to stay at least damp. If it dries out, you're not going to have any image. So you have to have your darkroom stuff with you. So I thought it'd be fun to show our first adventure with the collodion process internationally was when we went to Ireland in 1996. So this is a setup that we had, the portable darkroom in the back of our car. It's Mark and me. I'm sorry, these are from slides, so they're not really the best as far as detail. But I just want to show you, too, that we picked up the gloves. That was just Mark being dramatic. and of course, we're doing all the fixing and everything on the side of the road. Wherever we were traveling. And I thought this might be good to show because this is what Sally was dealing with when she was photographing in the South. She was doing the same exact thing. And here is Mark take a dramatic photograph in a dramatic way. Such a great picture. But what's interesting is that right after this fish, I took this picture, the camera fell and broke. It was in the middle of our trip. And then, of course, we had to drive around finding string, glue, and clamps so he could fix the camera. And of course he did, because Mark was a musical instrument maker at one time. He's a man of many talents. But and then there's silver nitrate. Silver nitrate stains everything. So, you know, usually we wear gloves, but we found that our gloves in Ireland had powder on them and they were getting all over the plates. So we finally threw the gloves away. And this is what happens. So it's the only time we've ever done it. I would not recommend it. Your skin is an organ, so let's keep in mind that's. But actually, my fingertips were actually silvering on the ends from the silver. Yeah. It's actually a burn, a mild burn. So I thought I'd show just a couple of examples of work from that series so you can understand why Sally's always apologizing to us. Because collodion can be an absolute, you can make perfect film. You know, you just need to understand what's happening and a little practice. You can actually make perfect negatives. And that's what Mark was doing, is making perfect negatives. He's kind of a show-off that way. but this is a really beautiful negative, a print from a negative that Mark made in Ireland. And here's another one. This was interesting because of I really like the movement of the trees, you know, long exposures. And then also what you don't see is a whole group of French tourists walking through the picture. And Mark was just saying, keep moving. And of course, you know, if they keep moving, then you don't see the ghost image. And then this is one of mine from Ireland, Mount Drasta. So I have some atmosphere going on in here, which I liked. We shot in the west of Ireland. One of Mark's amber types, this is an 8x10, hand-tinted. So he tints it with a pigment or pastel. And then he also burnishes certain parts of the image, actually rubbing the silver particle. So he's actually polishing the silver to make it shiny. So he sort of developed that technique. And that's an 8x10 amber type on dark glass. Here's another one, also hand tinted. Just to give you a sense of how clean his plates are. Mark will go up to the studio to work for a weekend when he gets a chance, which doesn't happen enough. And he'll spend the whole weekend working. And he'll come down on Sunday evening. And I'll say, so, how'd you do? And he goes, I have an amber type. One. He wiped off all the others. I'm like, Mark, don't wipe them all off. So Mark taught photography at George School, which is a private Quaker boarding school. He taught there photography full time for 20 years. And in the summertime, some parents would come in with their prospective students to check out the school, and in one day walked a man with his daughter, and his daughter said, those cameras that you have are interesting, especially the ones with the brass lenses. I think my mom would be very interested in seeing those. And Mark said, oh, is your mom a photographer? And she said, yeah. And Mark said, well, what's her name? She said, Sally Mann. Mark said, oh, I think I know who that is. So we gave them a little demonstration, talked about the collodion process, and within a week we got this in the mail, a folded up print in a letter-sized envelope. I want you to know she folded it up. Beautiful. And on the back she wrote, now we had talked a lot about our Ireland trip with Larry and Jesse. She said, I admit to being more eager to hear about your amazing photographs than most of the other trip details. I didn't know anyone was making wet plate negatives. I'd love to see what you're doing and how. And I thought this was interesting, too. She points out up here. Do you know Emmett G? He lives there, Emmett Gowan. Yes, and Emmett Gowan lives in the same town that we were living in. So, yes, we knew Emmett, and he came to our opening. Oh. So she also sent one of these prints, beautiful print of Emmett, her son. We sent her a print, and she said, the image you sent is utterly utterly convincing. It's the satiny grainlessness that I want. Just saw a gorgeous 19th century collection. So she's starting to think about, this is sort of starting to influence her. And she's mentioned that she's coming up for APAD and would like to come for a visit. So I think this, I'm not sure if this is the print she's talking about. We sent her this print at some point of Jesse that Mark made. It's a negative that Mark did of Jesse when she was there. So Jesse attended George School. So getting back to Ireland, the last image I made of the trip was of Ulsterstone, and I had been wanting to shoot it the whole trip. And of course, the last day I could shoot, I finally got to do it, and it was raining. So this is a stone that's in a field that's owned by friends of ours. We had been going there every summer and developed these friends. And they told us the story about the stone, and it's an important story because it's steeped in the history of the Irish and Catholicism. When the penal laws were in effect, they couldn't say mass, it was illegal. So they would hide in this field and cover the stone with petticoats or whatever fabric they had and say mass in secret. And they were taking their lives in their hands by doing this. So this, they know this story and it's been passed down, so they honor the stone. They never move it. They still plow the field, but they just plow around it. And you see that people put little stones, little tiny stones on top of this rock. So when I was photographing it, it was raining for about 3 minutes, and then the last minute the sun came out, and then this is the image that I got. So it never looked like that at any one given time, and so I really love the lighting and some of the markings up. This is from my hands, you know, holding the plate because I have small hands, and then these are marks that I cannot explain to this day, and I think I usually can identify almost anything, but that one we still are stumped by. For me, also the lens really lends something to this as well. It's the focusing on the center, on the stone itself, and the rest falling out like a very painterly effect. It's a, they call it now bokeh. I call it fall off. But so that was an important for me too. So taking something that looks, that you might pass by, that looks ordinary, and making it, you know, important. So when Sally did come to visit, we were just getting ready for our exhibit of our Ireland series, and Mark had just put this print up, framed, and she walked in to, we were just telling the story, she walked in and she dropped her purse and she said, "Fudge, that's what I want to do." Like, she didn't say fudge. So this is one of Sally's first attempts, and this is a little bit out of sequence, but I just thought I'd show this, that she was starting to pour collodion, and I don't know what the image is, but, and it was peeling too. You can see this is all peeling off the plate. But I thought I'd share this one because this letter that's on the back is a very important letter, and it talks about that she finally got some books that she can send to us from the gallery, and also she's starting to think about the process, and she recommended us to a gallery. And then she's also starting to think about her traveling to the South and making images in the South. So it's sort of the beginning, the germ of the idea of the Deep South series. So I thought it was very important for that reason. And then also she's talking about that's down here, and she's talking about her family, that Jesse really likes George School, and she was accepted to IB program, but she's not going to go, and Emmett's being accepted to school, and sadly, Larry's diagnosis. They first find out about Larry having muscular dystrophy. So I thought it was an important letter to share. And it's big. That's a very big print. So then she sent us this book, which is Motherland. These are all orthofilm. And what's interesting about that is that Mark and I also started with orthofilm before we did collodion. We were playing with it as well because it has a similar color sensitivity, and you can get some markings on the plate, although it's not exactly the same. This is probably the only time she wrote us, she signed a book where she's not apologizing. This is before she started doing collodion. She always was very thoughtful about sending us prints and books. So she asked us to come down to Virginia to teach her the process, and so on the way down, I shot this as small negative and made a silver gelatin print from it. When we got there, Mark did the first test shot, and this is of Sally's beloved dog. And you've seen, I'm sure, pictures of this dog afterwards. So she shot the skin and bones and things. So this is a small ambrotype. So Sally then, for her first shot, did the most amazing, impractical, difficult shot that you can imagine. She took her camera with a heavy brass lens and pointed it down into the swimming pool. And Larry, her husband, came out, and I met Larry for the first time. Hi, Larry, how you doing? He takes his clothes off and jumps into the pool. And so she's shooting something that's white against a dark background, out of focus, with the lens pointing down. It's the most difficult thing possible. And of course, it's just beautiful. So that's her first shot of the day that we did. But I just want to point out that these markings here are, that can be caused by an overused silver bath, which would be our bad, because I think we brought the silver bath. Or it could also be if you rush the plate into the bath too soon, so it's probably one of those. But I think it's actually kind of beautiful with this because it's water, right? It kind of works. And then she also shot a negative of Jesse standing against trees. And it's a beautiful image. Unfortunately, it's not a great picture of it because it's a little hard to see, but it's shot in situ in her studio, and she really wanted me to include it. And also because Jesse's little ballet costume is there from when she was little. Then we got this huge tube. I'm jumping ahead. Wait a minute. She sometimes writes notes on the back. Usually she writes just right on the print itself. In this case, she wrote on Post-it notes. And she's asking, what's going on with this picture? Is it overexposure? Is it the wrong proportions in the developer? The developer has iron in it, and it also has alcohol and acid. And she's asking if it's too fast. In other words, do I need to add more acid? Or she's asking, is it bad technique? Am I, you know, not coating it fast enough? Well, when you pour developer, it's not how fast you pour, it's how evenly. She says, impossible, I pour really fast. There you go. So this is the print she's asking about. So this is the markings that she's wondering about, and I'd say underexposure, not overexposure. But anyway, that's what that's about. Then we got this really big tube in the mail, and it was this big, and it was rolled up. And it turns out it wasn't in a tube. It was just the print, taped. So that's what it looks like unrolled. And you can see this is there. Here's the address, right? And there's the letter. And just to show you how big it is, we took it to Eastman House so we could photograph it. There we are, from the balcony, so you can see. Beautiful print, by the way. So she says, I need to put my glasses on for this. Surely no thank you could be more heartfelt than this one or bigger. Oh, that was appropriate. That was sweet. So the other thing she's talking about is we learned so much from watching you work. Most we learned that are much deeper quicksand than we thought. But like quicksand, impossible to extricate ourselves. Oh, and then this is also talking about some other things, about trying to find a camera. She's looking for a camera and always complaining about equipment. But, you know, it's not really about the camera. It's about the lens, you know. So in 2001, we had planned a conference to celebrate the anniversary of the invention of the collodion process by Frederick Scott Archer. And we had about 100 people coming to the conference, a lot of people interested in collodion, people making collodion images. There was about 30, 35 at the time. So people just starting to, you know, get into it. And we asked them all to send examples of the work. So we had a little exhibition at George Eastman Museum. And people coming from other countries, speakers. And unfortunately, it was the weekend after 9/11. So flights were stopped. People couldn't come. It was unfortunate we had to cancel it. But since people were already driving across country at that point, we decided, let's turn this into something good. So we just like gave everybody their money back and decided to have a free, just a free day of, you know, whoever we could pull together. So we had a demonstration of albumen printing. We had a few speakers. And then we had a get together at our house for all the people who were doing collodion process who came. So it was really, that was a really nice way to end it. So Sally asked, so Sally sent this and she said, so disappointed about the conference. Can I come for a visit anyway sometime when things settle down? When's that? and this is the print that she sent it on. And you can see this is kind of, you can see bits of this in other work that she's produced. I thought this was funny, too. This is a 19th century evaluation of what these markings are. Unskillfulness. So just remember these markings when you see the next image. There you go. But in Sally's case, it's not unskillfulness. She's very funny and apologizing all the time, but she a lot of the things she's doing intentionally, you know, and we think that's really important that people understand that. If you understand how something happens, you know, we'll get two calls in the same day. One will be from a reenactor who says, I got these markings all over my plate. How do I get rid of them? And then the same day, we'll get a call from Sally, and she'll say, I got these markings all over my plate. How do I get them again? So, there you go. So these markings are actually from when you pour the collodion on the plate, and then instead of coating it evenly, maybe pouring a little bit more, letting some of it start to set up, that's why they called it unskillfulness, because it really has to do with how you pour the collodion. But she's using it to great effect. And so just for by comparison, at the same time Sally was doing that work, I was producing a body of work of sleeping pictures. And these are portraits of people sleeping. People that I know, they're really sleeping. 8x10 collodion negatives, and then salt prints, so hand-coated salt prints. And you know, most of the work is pretty clean, like this one. But I also embrace artifacts from time to time, and in a very different way than Sally does, of course. These are things that happened on the plate that I didn't plan. Like these markings are from putting the plate into the silver bath unevenly. Maybe I didn't have enough silver in there. So that sort of thing, and of course he was moving. He was Guilherme, was from Brazil. He was having nightmares, and I thought that the things that were happening on the plate sort of went with that whole idea that he was having trouble sleeping. Carol, so dreamlike, and I thought I just liked the markings on this one. And this one has more subtle markings on it, but. Again, I didn't like wipe it off and start over. Sometimes I embrace the artifacts. And Sally, of course, embraces fog, among other things, especially in this series. This one is, this is a battlefield. And what I love about this is these are dust that's on the plate. And when you put the plate into the silver bath, the dust prevents the silver from coating it evenly. So you sort of get these comets. We call them comets. And she used that as a way of talking about bullets and, of course, the battlefield. Here's one that I think is, this is from the death farm, I think they call it, in Virginia, where she went to photograph bodies in different stages of decay. This one looks like fog, right? But, of course, it's not. This is movement of bugs. Pretty creepy, but so beautiful too, you know, it's so amazing. And this is one of my favorites of Sally's in this and the landscapes. This looks like fog, in like there's fog in real life, but I think actually it's either chemical or exposure fog. And fog can be caused by so many things, but I think it's such a beautiful use of that artifact that can happen. Such a great example. Fog is such a problem with collodion, and it can happen with chemicals, it can be exposure, it can be light leaks. You know, there's so many reasons that you can have fog that we have a whole section in the back of our manual on how to work your way out of a fog. Because we think it's important to understand why it's happening. And then again, you can prevent it or make it happen. So of course, fog, and beautifully done. So she has this whole series of portraits with, that's Virginia. We sent Sally this booklet that was produced by Edwin Haukel, her gallery, and also Hans Krauss. And it's a series of images of plates from plates that were made by a 19th century photographer. And they're not really sure. They think it's Simard is the name of the photographer. But I think it's a little bit unclear. But they photographed orchards and also models. And it's really an amazing work. They had asked Mark to write the technical notes, which is how we came to know about it. So that's Mark's section there. But we sent it to Sally because we thought she would find this very interesting. I mean, look at this image, it's beautiful. And look at the markings. This is very unusual for 19th century. They would normally wipe it off because of these markings. This is from a cold silver bath. The silver bath is too cold, you get these kind of markings. But it's absolutely lovely. Amazing that this was an artist who created these. So Sally sent us her book, Proud Flesh, and here you go. Forgive the mess I make of your elegant process. Again, apologies. So funny. But I wanted to show how at least one of the images in the booklet that we sent her may have influenced her work. There's Larry. It's a very similar kind of look. And then there were others as well, but we asked her, did that influence your work? And, oh, yes, definitely. And this one, which is the cover, I had the same thing happen to me. I had the exact same markings. And I took the plate out of my silver bath. We wipe off the back of the plate holder, the plate before we put it into the plate holder. And, you know, we have it on a paper towel. And my plate fell forward by accident. It landed face down on the paper towel. It's like, oh, damn. So I put it back to the silver bath, you know, re-wet it. Thought, oh, that'll get rid of it. Made the image. I got exactly the same thing. So it's from falling on a paper towel. Here's another one from that series, which I felt kind of reminded me a little bit of my sleep series, which I was doing around, I think, the same time. So just coincidence. And then there's the Deep South series, which is, I think, a combination of some of the ortho work, earlier ortho work, and combined with Collodion images. I'm not certain this was an influence for her, maybe, in the back of her mind, but I couldn't help but notice the coincidence and sort of the way that this was shot. And of course, then she adds this, right, artifact. And then, of course, I thought this would be a perfect way to end it. Appreciation for your help, and I'll do better. So thank you. I'll be happy to take any questions that you may have. Yes?
Your sleep series, how many exposures of each subject would you allow yourself? Did you only take one exposure sort of first sitting?
No, I had them come and they would, I would just keep shooting as long as they were sleeping. I put on sleep music. You know, I have them come first thing in the morning, no caffeine. And I put on this soft music to try to distract from my running water and all that. And, you know, they wear whatever they sleep in. So they go to sleep and I go to work, and I just kept shooting. And then some people I could make, you know, four or five plates. Some people I could make, you know, much longer. This one couple, they were out late partying, so they slept all day. It was great.
A lot of time for work.
Yeah, so yeah, as many as possible. Yeah, and some subjects I would have them come back several days. So people would say, oh, I can't sleep during the day. You'd be amazed how many people are sleep deprived. Any other questions? Yes?
So how critical is it to varnish a negative? Because I guess if you're pouring varnish very carefully, you can make sure you're not getting artifacts. But tarnishing still critical?
It's absolutely critical. Because it's silver, it's going to tarnish. It's not only going to get scratched, it can get tarnished. Yeah, it's going to change. And it won't be good. there'll be nothing good about that, yeah. Varnishing is, it's a little tricky because you have a warm plate and warm varnish. But it just takes a little practice, and it's so worth it because now they're basically permanent. They're not going to change. As long as you've processed it properly, you know, fixed it properly, washed it properly, all that beforehand, it's amazing. And you can handle them. Also, if you try to print from a negative and it's not varnished, you're going to scratch it. And let me tell you, it's happened to me. It's just tears. It is really not good. So yeah, varnish is important. Yes?
How do you determine exposure?
By eye. A lot of people ask, why don't we use a light meter? But we don't, because it's not just about the amount of light, it's the quality or color of the light. And we've just gotten used to looking at the light, and we encourage our students to do the same thing, try and stick with, in the beginning especially, the same camera, even the same stop, and just get a sense of the lighting. The light is more blue in the morning, so more actinic and faster. In the late afternoon in the summer, it's very warm, it's bright, but it's very warm and yellow. And this process is insensitive to yellow. You know, we can use a yellow safe light. So I think looking at the color of the light is really important. Yes?
I noticed in your slides that the equipment appeared to be so ancient.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, we use 19th century cameras. And you can use you can use more modern cameras, and a lot of people do. That's probably the less expensive way to go. It's really more about the importance of the lens and the effect of the lens. But we happen to find, we've been doing this for a long time, so over the years we've been able to find cameras.
And the lenses are equally as old?
Yes, oh yes. The lens is actually more important than they are for us. You can use a modern lens, of course, but we like the effect, the old lenses have. Yes? Right, and that's a good point, because I don't know why we did that for this when we were photographing it, but I always wear gloves. So that's a good point. She was wondering why I didn't have gloves on. And yes, I do wear gloves. I don't know why we did that. But I always recommend gloves. So thank you. Anybody else? Yes? I never have. No, I never have. But it's something that I worry about because I'm kind of a worrywart that way, Mark will tell you. And in fact, when we heat up the varnish, the image I showed of heating the varnish over a flame, we don't do that anymore. We actually heat it in hot water, like a bain-marie. We have it on a heater in a Pyrex. Or you could use a coffee cup. But you just want to keep the varnish warm. It doesn't have to be over flame, because the varnish is a flammable liquid. Right, so that's dangerous. But I understand Sally has had a fire. So yes, that'll get your attention. So we also recommend having, a fire extinguisher for flammable liquids, because, accidents can happen. Well, thank you so much for coming. It was really my pleasure. Really.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.